Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. In this edition of Commodity Week, we'll hear the corn panel as presented at the March 10th All-Day Ag Outlook panel at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. The panel included Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Pete Van Hart from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois, and from Mandeville, Louisiana, CGB Enterprises' Dan Zwicker. We began our conversation by taking up a single question to build both a bearish and bullish scenario for the price of new crop corn in 2015. Our conversation starts with Dan Zwicker.
One comment I want to make, and this is going to be probably a little wild, as some people thought I was a lunatic when I was talking about a fall rally, so I guess I'll keep that lunatic coined, is that I'm not too sure that we haven't been going through the 30s depression over the past 5 or 6 years. It's just that it looks different. In the 30s, you had the soup lines. The soup lines have been replaced by food stamps. In the 30s, you had people standing on corner blocks hunting for jobs, unemployment, insurance, welfare payments. That kind of replaced that. And so it's camouflage compared to what it was in the 30s because of all of our safety nets. And if that is an idea, if that's somewhat in the cards, I kind of think we're starting to come out of the depression, but I really don't know how we're going to come out of it. But the depression, we came out of 30s depression because of World War II. And but somewhere along the line here is that the economy is beginning to show signs of strengthening. Now, as soon as we see a positive sign, we see a negative sign. But I think the Fed's going to have another round of quantitative easing. So I think we're going to print more dollars. I think overall, around the world, in each country, I think the central banks are going to have problems, people having faith in their ability to control the economy and paper dollars, because basically that paper dollar is all about confidence in your government. Yeah. If you lose confidence in your government, that paper bill is absolutely worthless, just like it is. Next step here, I'm going to take the started off with my quote. Actually, I'm a Texan, I ride bulls. So I'm gonna ride a bull here in corn for a minute. I look at the move out of the 05 low and the low that we saw last fall at 318 as of completed three waves to the top, ABC correction, Elliott wave. We had the first high in 07 or 08, and then we had one there in 10, and then we had another one in 12. The decline off of the 12 high down to the 406 low, which was done a year ago harvest, was A, the rally last spring to 518 or 519 was B, and the decline down to 318 was C. So I think from an Elliott wave perspective, the corn market has completed three drives to the top and an ABC correction, and we're in the early stages of a bull market. For those of you that followed us many, many moons ago when I was a young buck driving a 1983 944, remember me talking about 27-year cycle lows. And we had a low in 1960, and then we had we in AgriVisors kind of got famous as being the big bears because we were talking about prices going into a mid-80s low because of that 27-year cycle. And we went into the mid-80s low. And if you count out of the mid-80s and count 27 years out, we're here. So I think we are at a 27-year cycle low in commodities. And that's one of the reasons why I think we're coming out of the depression. And from my cyclical point of view, I view that we've got an upturn in the 54-55-month cycle that's in play. And that should lift us higher over the next 2 to 3 years. Is that enough for you, Todd?
I guess we're not getting a bearish one from you. Although, there are times when the market turns down, and you already explained those. And if I remember Elliott Waves correctly, we've done three, you said, but there are five, right?
Well, there's five waves, but that's three drives.
Yeah, you've got, we've up, done three down. Of three of five, we've done three
we've
of five
We've had the five
drives.
Waves up, or the five, it's a five count. But
it's a
three
five
drives
count.
To the top. First is one, down is two, three, four, five. Three drives to the top.
Right. Wait, so you gave us all three drives.
And then we have an A, B, C correction.
No, I understand what he's telling me. I'm just thinking about what that means.
Just start of a bull market. Okay, this is how I'm going to back it up.
All right. I'm not going to let him talk the rest of the time.
So. I'll shut up after this. But over the last few years, we've had record yields with years ending in four. You go back to 1994-95 when we had a record yield of 138.6. And we came off of a 1993 flood that basically the state of Iowa didn't hardly grow anything.
Right.
The following year, we dropped back to 113 bushels per acre. That was an 18% drop off of that spike. Remember, 138 or 139 was a major spike up in corn yields at that time. Okay, you go over to 2004, 2005. In 2003-04, we had 142. We spiked up to 160, and then we fell back to 148. Not as severe drop, but it was an 8% drop. So if you say the range is between an 8 to 18% drop from 171, our yield this year is going to be between 140 and 157.
Hmm. Well, that'll make you bullish.
Yeah.
That'll make you bullish. On the other hand, Jackie Vakes, the national average yield is much higher than that, depending on who you're listening to, somewhere in that 165, 66, 67.
Well, Scott Irwin said we have a 50% chance of being between 160 and 170 in the report that he put out.
Right.
11% below 150 and 22 above 170. So where are we? I mean, you know, that's an interesting perspective. So, you know, it lies, our greatest opportunities are between 160 and 170. But, you know, if you look at the marketplace, you know, and if we're going to talk bullish, bearish.
Sure.
You know, crude oil prices, we all know what's happening with crude oil prices, okay? It's killing the frackers. There's no question about that. At the same time, it's putting more disposable income in, you know, into people's pockets. As long as the U.S. dollar remains higher, I think we're going to see less South American corn production, and I'll back that up by saying that we had an Argentinian that came into the Ag Forum, and he laid out how a bean farmer decides whether he's going to plant beans or whether he's going to plant corn. And he said basically because of the tax situation they have, the exchange rate situation that they have, and they are paid based on U.S. dollars, but they are paid in their local currency because it is against the law to be paid in any foreign currency. Because then, and $10, this is the way he laid it out. He said $10 at the CME, $3.75 gone for export tax, $3 gone for exchange rate. The government makes a lot of money on that. About 25 cents gone to the elevator. So it leaves the guy about $3. Then he's got to pay real estate taxes, or he's got to pay, you know, his everything else. And by the time you get to the bottom, that $3 gross is what he's got left to to pay his inputs, to pay everything else right down the line, including real estate tax and landlord. And so he said what they do is they look at the May contract, and if you look at the May contract for 16 right now on both corn and beans, take it times 25%. That's what they're looking at as a potential gross coming back to them. Corn is at $1.07, beans are at $2.45. They're going to plant beans. And so I think we're going to see a switch in South America as long as the dollar stays higher. Granted, the dollar being higher hurts us from an export standpoint, and yet on the other side, it kind of helps us because it takes some of our competitors out of the marketplace. At the same time, you've got live cattle numbers. You heard Chris Hurt talk this morning. Live cattle numbers are growing. Oh, hog numbers are growing like you can't believe. Milk production and expansion of dairy cows growing dramatically, those are all positive things for us on the corn side of things, and I think that they could support a better marketplace. What are some of the things that make it dangerous to us? Well, if you looked at the hedge funds this week, just last week alone, they dropped 130 million ag contracts out of their portfolio, 1 week. Why is that? Well, if you look at what happened, you know, you look at the Dow. The Dow is in its sixth year of increases, okay? We've only had two times in the last 100 years that the Dow has made it through the seventh year without failing, okay? But what happened was, as the Dow was falling and things were going to pieces during this recession area, a lot of these guys had to come to us to hedge their portfolio. They would buy ag commodities as a hedge. It's beginning to shift the other way again, and we're starting to see them pull some of that hedge because they don't necessarily need it as much. That's dangerous to us as far as I'm concerned. You look at the world economies, that just scares a person to death. There are 14 central banks right now doing quantitative easing. That's not a good thing for us. And I think one of the biggest terrors is the euro, you know, and what can happen over there. And that definitely has an impact on us. Job openings at this point in time, you know, you look at the, you know, we're improving, right? But job openings right now are at a 14-year high because people don't want to work. We have so many people right now that are between the ages of 16 and 26. The unemployment rate, they start figuring it out at 16. The unemployment rate has almost doubled in the last 3 years, and you know that those are our prime work people. Basically is what it is. And so I think, you know, we have to look at the big picture. And I think the biggest danger to us is China back in 2011, they put in price supports to keep their farmers from migrating into the cities, okay? But they put them in 2011. Remember where prices were back then? They're not anywhere close to that now. So why do we have such tremendous demand out of them? It's because they keep supporting their farmer at this high price. Do you think a manufacturer is gonna buy from them at the high price? When they can get it from us and ship it for cheaper than what their price is? Not at all. So this is going to come to an end, whether it's this next year. It's going to come to an end sometime. Actually, what they've been talking about, when I was at Ag Forum, I talked to a guy who I consider to be an expert on China, and he said they're thinking about doing transition payments like we used to have. So what could happen to our market? That's the scary part. So I think what it comes down to, no matter how you look at it, it's all about managing your risk. It's not about hoping the market's going to go higher. It's about being afraid it's going to go lower and knowing what your costs are and managing that risk. And so you can make arguments 100 different ways, I think, on either side pretty much, but it still comes down to the bottom line, and is that saving the equity you've earned over these last number of years when we've had these high prices and over your whole lifetime in farming. That's what it's all about.
Okay, I'm going to pull you, but I only need which direction you think this is going to be. Are you bullish friendly or bearish the bean market? And I'm working at something else for an answer. So Dan, bullish, bearish?
I gotta be bullish beans.
Bullish beans.
I'd have to say I'm neutral beans.
Neutral.
Neutral bearish.
Neutral to bearish.
Neutral to bearish.
Neutral to bearish beans. Okay. So I want to talk a little bit about the corn to bean ratio with you. Bill, just to begin
with. I just got ready to answer the question you asked those guys.
I don't remember the question I asked those guys.
Give me a profit bowl and a price positive and a price negative scenario.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm good with that. You've been thinking about it for a while.
Well, I think a couple things is when you put together a marketing plan, one of the things we work really hard on is putting out a you know, a 6-week, 8-week, 12-week window of opportunity, and then realizing what prices you're going to market against. One of the prices or one of the costs you know is what your cost of production is based on, let's say, a 5-year yield, and then you know what would offer you a profit and a reasonable standard of living, and then what percentage of your crop you're going to need to market in those price ranges in order to have an effective income. So laying the groundwork right now is not necessarily a bullish or a bearish scenario, but knowing what those price ranges are and the tools that you want to use in order to capture that. So I'd say going forward, you know, when we look at a situation with, right, this is, we got a pretty decent demand base overall with corn that's probably not going to shift much. And as Chris said this morning, our livestock is probably going to come to us. We do have some currency concerns, so our exports might be a little shaky at times. But at the end of the day, the quantity demanded might change a little bit, but the demand is probably going to be the same with the, when it comes to currency issues. So all the things considered, I'd say the bearish scenario is, you know, if the dollar does go higher and we get big acres at the end of the month or through the production season at a good yield, and on top of that have a lot of corn in the bin right this minute that has not been moved by early summer, that's going to be a price negative scenario, because what we're worried about is the compression of two marketing years coming to the market at the same time. Yeah. A price friendly scenario would be maybe a slower start to the spring. You know, we've had really cold temperatures. The ground's not warming up like we would like. There's still time, but if things do happen to go slow and we stay a little cooler than we want, we don't get the jump on our tillage work, fertilizers, get things planted like we're seeing in the South already, then that's going to basically maybe trim some of our yield prospects off, maybe trim some of our acres off, and then open up our upside potentials. Does that make us wildly bullish? No. But it does give you an opportunity to maybe sell at some of those higher prices early that are going to make you make your income statement work for you, which this year we're working with a compressed situation. You're not going to get those really high highs probably to market into, and cross our fingers we won't have those really low lows that we've thought about in the past. But right this minute, you know, the friendly scenario would be, you know, maybe some reduced acres, maybe a little bit of slow start to the year, and maybe not the ideal yields, and not trimming off our demand base like some people think we might. The bearish scenario, probably most importantly, is seeing 2 years of crop getting marketed in a 60-day period, which would be, you know, mid to late summer, where the guys realize I got a great yield and I still got the, my bins are full. That would be a T-bone that we just can't afford.
Pete, do you want to build a bullish and a bearish scenario too?
Sure. When's the last time, where was the U.S. dollar at the last time we had corn eyes back in 2008? It was about 120 or higher. Just because the dollar is going up doesn't mean our prices are going to go down. The dollar was at one of its highs the last time we had the highest corn prices ever. So that's something that we can shoot a hole through that doesn't have to happen. We have great usage of corn. Problem is, we got a lot of it laying around. I would be, if you want to stay long corn, I would literally be dumping old crop, buying a cheap July call if you think it's going to go up. But I'd dump it now instead of waiting for it to go down. If I hold the corn, I would protect the bottom against all this corn coming in there. But usage is really good. If we do have a wet spring and we have acres that are smaller, that's bullish to the high side. Now, what's bullish? To me, right now, we've been in about a 25-cent range for the last how long? You know, 405 to 425. I think 450 is bullish and 390 is bearish. I don't see us going to 318, but I don't see us going to $5 either. I think we're sideways and we have to take advantage of bounces. We kept hearing about this 15, 25-cent bounce of this morning. What if that doesn't happen?
You're listening to Commodity Week from Illinois Public Media. Back in a moment.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser with a look at the weather for corn and soybean production in South America. Generally quiet weather prevailed this past week in Argentina and South Brazil, while showers and thunderstorms continue to cause delays farther north in the double crop areas of Brazil. In Argentina, mostly dry and very warm to hot weather gave fields soaked by heavy rains late last month in San Luis, Cordoba, and Santa Fe a chance to dry out. The extent of damage from flooding rains is not yet known. For other areas that weren't soaked last month, fields are turning dry. The forecast for Argentina is for a continuation of mostly dry to very warm weather into the middle of next week. Then some rain is likely with the passage of a cold front late in the week. Most corn and soybeans are now maturing and beyond the prime moisture sensitive stage. However, some later planted crops still in the reproductive stage may experience some yield losses from dry weather in the coming week. In South Brazil, mostly dry weather this past week helped corn harvest reach around one-half complete across Rio Grande do Sul. The soybean harvest there is just getting underway. Early indications point to an excellent crop in Rio Grande do Sul. A little farther north in Paraná, crops also look good. Fields across Paraná are now just drying out enough for harvest progress to get into full swing. The forecast for all of South Brazil and neighboring Paraguay is for dry weather through much of next week. That means there will be a long stretch of open weather for harvest progress. The next chance of widespread rain does not appear likely before the end of next week. Farther north, rain fell on at least a few days in the past week across most of center-west, southeast, and northeast Brazil. The rain maintained delays to first crop harvesting and second crop corn planting. Improvement is finally on the way as rainfall coverage and amounts will drop off in the coming week. That will allow for better field access. In Mato Grosso, the largest second crop corn-producing state, planting is not yet done. More than a third of that crop will be planted so late that it runs a real risk of not reaching the moisture-sensitive pollination stage until after the dry season starts. Typically, that's in late April and early May. That is your South American weather update. I'm meteorologist Ed Keyser.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
This is a special edition of Commodity Week. Excerpts from our corn panel recorded the 10th day of March at the All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Other panels included on that day, one on cash grain, soybeans, livestock, and land values. They're all at WILLAG.org. Now we continue our conversation with Jackie Vakes, Bill Gentry, Pete Manhart, and Dan Zwicker.
Dan, I want you to take up the corn-to-bean ratio, how it might, could change, what it is currently, where it normally is, and what you think it might be.
Well, I wish I probably would have brought a chart. All my stuff's on PowerPoints that I've been doing the last couple of weeks. But the corn-soybean ratio kind of follows a five-year cycle, favoring corn every 5 years. And then it moves to the extreme in about 2.5 years to favor beans, and then it spends 2.5 years coming back down to favor corn. And basically, we've been neutral. I can consider a 2-4 to a 2-6 ratio is basically neutral and really doesn't move any acres. I think you got to get the corn soybean ratio down into 2.2 to 1.9 to favor corn, and you need to get it up to 3-1 to 3.4 to favor soybeans. Now we've had a high on soybeans here a year or so ago, so I think we're now in the direction of the corn soybean ratio of moving toward corn. So I think over the next 12 months to 18 months, we're going to be back to 2-to-1 on corn. Okay, now, I guess the question is, and this is kind of the bear part, if corn stays at $4 and we go to 2-to-1, that means beans are going to float down to 8, and there's your 2-to-1. But if I could get corn to go to $5, then I could get beans to go back to 10.
Yeah. You were going to follow up on the corn-to-bean ratio.
Oh, sure.
Go ahead.
I'd be happy to do that.
I knew you would. Sure she would.
Well, I don't know. You know, it's interesting. I always think it's really interesting because we hear so many times, you know, the corn-bean ratio indicates we should do this. The corn-bean ratio indicates what it really comes down to is what does it cost you in your particular situation and with what your yields are. So I started in 2007. I wrote an Excel spreadsheet, real simple for my clients, just said, let's look at where we're at. And I was up to $200 an acre more to plant corn than beans. And I just used that again this year. I thought I'm not gonna back it off. We'll see once where we're at. So I ran this out of Decatur just the other day. Decatur was a nickel under on beans on basis. It was 18 under on corn. With 60 bushel beans, 200 bushel corn. And you remember, you're $200 more per acre. That's $1 a bushel you're giving up. Corn kicked beans by $25 an acre. Then I ran it up on somebody who's in southern Wisconsin. Beans were 87 under, corn was 47 under. He's got 52 bushel beans and 187 corn, and corn kicked beans right out of the ballpark. And so, you know, it really doesn't, I don't care what they talk about when it comes to the ratio. The ratio's got to come down to what's going on your farm, what your production levels are, and what you know as the cost difference between the two. I think that you're right. I think we could look tight on the corn balance sheet, but that's still isn't necessarily the true picture.
And I would say that you also have to take into consideration the adjustment in the price that we saw just last week in the new crop beans. When you take the market down 30, 50, or 60 cents, that entire equation changed dramatically. And you have to, if you did your math prior to last week, the entire horizon has changed as far as beans are concerned. So you have to go back and look at that. Because most of the guys that we've talked to this week have said, that was a game changer for me. I really don't have the yield punch in beans that I have in corn. I'm going to pull back on my bean ideas and go more towards corn.
That's Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. He was joined on the corn panel at the All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, the 10th day of March by Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities. And that wraps up Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.